Hey, Dreamers, this is Omar Zinholm from the $100 MBA Show, reminding you to keep on dreaming and keep on listening to the Dreamers Podcast.
This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Hey, Dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm... Hey, Dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm talking with Josh Elledge, who is making his dreams come true through entrepreneurship. Glad to have you on the show, Josh.
Hey, thank you so much, Joe.
The pleasure's all mine, man. You seem to be doing pretty well with your dream. And I'm...
Oh, trust me, I am just getting started on my dreams. I just happen to have really, really audacious, crazy dreams.
They're some of the best ones, honestly. So why don't we get started by giving some background about yourself?
Sure, sure. So I'm originally from Michigan, and I joined the United States Navy. I was actually a Navy journalist for 5 years. And so I served in Hawaii for 3 years, which wasn't hard duty. It was actually pretty great. Met a beautiful girl there, and we ended up getting married. And she's actually from my neck of the woods. She was a tourist girl. And we fell in love and got married, and we've been married for 19 years. But along that journey, she and I have had some really great experiences. I went to school to study family therapy, marriage and family therapy, and so did she. We were both kind of like, okay, we're both going to be marriage and family therapists. And then this was during the age of kind of the dot-com boom, and there was so much opportunity if you knew how to do internet development. And I did. And so I ended up getting job offers out of college, even though I was studying family sciences and family therapy, for twice as much as what I would make as if I got my master's in marriage and family therapy and continued. So I got out and got a job in internet development, had a great job. And Joe, this was a pivotal moment for me because I've always run my own businesses when I could. In college, I had a mobile DJ business. I shared that, you know, you and I kind of have that in common. I have done other things on the side, did some side internet development, sold candy to kids when I was in middle school and got in trouble for it. You know, had my own lawn mowing company. I mean, it was just in my blood. My dad was a business owner. My grandma was a business owner. My great-great-grandpa, Amos Elledge, sold blocks of ice. He was a proprietor in an ice company, which I thought was just so cool. So it is just absolutely in my blood. And as much as I loved this job that I had in internet development, it wasn't my company. And just, you know, I felt myself doing things like just rushing off to please other people. And it just, I just felt out of alignment. And the moment that changed everything, and a lot of people have this when they have kids, there's just this new dynamic that happens in their life. And so I remember my daughter just, you know, gosh, probably about a year old, just over a year. Well, no, she was probably about two. And she was in the hallway closet, you know, looking in there. And I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm sure my wife will take care of her. I have to run off and get to work because I don't want to be late for the boss. And so I bolted out of there, you know, and I knew, gosh, there was something telling me I should have taken care of my daughter. I should have addressed that. So I'm on my way to work, racing, driving, getting to work. And about 20 minutes into my drive, my wife calls me frantic. And she says, you know, that my daughter had downed a half bottle of cough syrup and that she was racing her to the emergency room, click. And at that moment, Joe, I mean, nothing else mattered to me but my family. And I knew that I never wanted to be in a position where I was letting something else become more important to me than the things that truly were most important to me, and that was my family. So I went to three different hospitals. Finally, the third hospital I got to, you know, they had taken care of my daughter. She was in good health. It was fine. They'd, you know, taken care of her. But I just, in that moment, Joe, I knew that I needed to get right back. I needed to be on my true path, and that was through business ownership. And I just swore that I would never go back to working in corporate America. And so within 3 weeks, I quit my job and just did internet development on the side. I started a small town internet service provider. I started a newspaper, if you can believe that or not. I was a newspaper publisher for a couple of years. And, you know, all of these businesses either did okay or they failed. The newspaper was definitely not very profitable, went into some serious debt for that. But it gave me a lot of connections. I went into did some online marketing. And then finally, and you'll hear this story, I mean, from other entrepreneurs who fail many times over. And I finally, you know, got to what would end up being my seventh major business venture, and that was Savings Angel, and the experience was completely different. I could continue on, but I just wanted to give. I saw you kind of just this guy's on autopilot. I just want to let everybody know who's joining us in the conversation that this hasn't become the Josh show.
Well, the show is generally about the guests and not really about me. So,
yeah.
No, I think that's great. And before you go any further, let me just thank you for your service in the Navy. I really appreciate that. So I think I think that's a good spot to stop at, because that can bring, you know, that brings me to some of the next questions that I have. But before we get to those questions, and you've already kind of answered it, I mean, what does entrepreneurship mean to you?
Well, entrepreneurship is just... Okay, so you have something inside you. Like, you might call it like your music. So you have this music inside you. When you work a job for somebody else, you just don't have the luxury, the freedoms to do necessarily everything that you want to do. Now, maybe you do. Maybe your job allows you to do that. You have a creative job. But when you are an entrepreneur, you can pretty much do anything that you want to do. Now, you'll learn that everything has its consequences, good or bad. So you'll kind of learn that, yes, there are still some parameters if your objective is to do amazing things for the world and also get paid. There, we do have a responsibility to make sure that our families are taken care of and that we can afford a roof over our head. But entrepreneurism is just this true, which I can never say that word right. It's just this true, you know, letting go of, you know, just saying, gosh darn it, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do what I feel I am on the earth to do. And, you know, it was actually funny, because one of the most, and I've read a lot of personal development books, but one of the things that was most motivating for me was I think it was like Entrepreneurialism for Dummies, which was, it wasn't necessarily a very good book, but said something to the effect of, when you land the ships on the island, you're here to fight, burn the boats. So give yourself no alternative. I mean, what's the worst thing that could happen if you started a business on your own? It doesn't work out and you go back and you get another job. And I really thought about that. I'm like, yeah, you know, you can always get another job if you absolutely had to. But if you don't start your business, you'll never know if it was, you know, going to give you everything you wanted. So, yeah. So entrepreneurialism for me is about absolute freedom. And I tell you, though, it's about getting your nose bloodied and learning through experience. But you will learn so much so fast when the consequences are so direct to your actions. So, like I said, I've been doing this now, running my own company for, oh my gosh, since the year 2000 is when I started my first venture. I left corporate America. You know, there's just no way I'd ever go back.
I like to think the same way. What's the worst that could happen, and how can you mitigate that worst to make it not so bad? Like, come up with ways to talk yourself into doing it by looking at the positives and weighing that against the negatives, and then like coming up with solutions for the negatives to, you know, to mitigate it. So what would you say inspires you?
Well, my family clearly inspires me, because, you know, I want that lifestyle where I can choose my schedule. And, you know, this is a big part. Like, my grandma owns a health food store, and this is her thing. I mean, she wants to, you know, for her, you know, she loves to sleep in late and stay up late. I mean, she's in her 80s and she stays up past midnight every night. you know, watching TV, playing Scrabble, having friends over. She's in her 80s. She goes bowling. I mean, she's just awesome. She's just a great example to me. And, you know, it's, again, it's that freedom. That freedom is just so important to me. I want to be able to choose how I spend my time. And I love spending time with my family. Now, you know, another thing, when you do own your own business and you work from home, you really have to work very hard to shut off your work and say, okay, it's family time. But again, so I ask myself just what you asked me, why am I doing this? And that's when I just have to, you know, kind of set the laptop aside, push it back, you know, flip it down and, you know, turn my phone on airplane mode so I'm not bothered. I'm not getting alerts or alarms. And I say, you know what? I am doing this so that I can spend time with my family. I don't want to live my life forever where I will say, well, someday I'll have more time with my family. I choose, Joe, to make that day today.
Well, you know, you never know when you won't have tomorrow. So that's a great way to look at it. And I try to do that myself. It's tough sometimes, but, you know, mitigating what's important time and what's not important time. Sitting and watching TV to me is not really important time. Even if it's with my family, there is commercials, and that should be a time where you're interacting, but so often we find ourselves just looking at our phones anyway.
No. If you come watch TV at our house, we watch like America's Got Talent. That's kind of like our silly family show that we watch together. And, you know, we're just talking and, you know, it's throughout the whole thing. It's very, watching TV with our family is very interactive. We love to talk about what's going on, which if we ever have guests on, I can only assume that that's a little annoying.
Well, you know, I also don't have kids, so it's just me and my wife.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, been there and, you know, but even with my wife, you know, we love to go to movies and we know better than to, you know, be that couple that chats throughout the movie. But, you know, we both love to just, you know, we have the things that we love, but we love to talk about those things. And, you know, and you know, if your personality type is one where you just love other people and you love to learn from other people, it's a happy life. I mean, the fact that you interview people on a podcast, I mean, just it says to me that you enjoy other people and you want to learn from other people. You've got a very, very happy life ahead of you. I can just speak from experience. You know, you will have far more luck than the average person because you like other people and you're open to new experiences and you're open to learning from other people. It's, you know, being a podcaster is, you know, is just one of the greatest jobs to have if you want to give yourself a job, because you just introduce yourself to so many cool people.
Yeah. You know what? You nailed it right on the head there. I do love people. The more the merrier. I'm always about including instead of excluding. Ever since I was even little, I was always about including rather than excluding. And having the opportunity to start a podcast where I get to interview pretty much anybody at any given time is just really phenomenal. I really love the people that I get to interview and, you know, make new friends out of it. It's just a wonderful experience, as you know, from your having your own show. So let's get into how exactly did Savings Angel come about?
What Savings Angel is we help people cut their grocery bill in half. We're very, very successful. It's a great service, but it was born completely out of necessity because at the time I was working in internet marketing and actually had an independent contractor position with another company. And I kind of saw that contract as kind of coming to a close. I was becoming increasingly dissatisfied with that relationship. And my income was just not real stable. So my wife and I, you know, we had the personal development down. You know, I certainly had the philosophy of working my guts out down. But I think the one thing that I wasn't very good at was being a good steward over what I was blessed with or, you know, the money that I had. And as a result of that, you know, looking at an unstable income, we said, you know what, we need to get really serious about how we're spending our money. And so I read a book called The Richest Man in Babylon, went through Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University, just really became interested in the subject. And there was this line item in our spending plan for groceries and consumables. And, you know, for whatever reason, Joe, I can't tell you why to this day, but I just became obsessed with that line item because I had heard of other people who had figured out some magic formula where they were able to cut their grocery bill in half. And so I found every single book I could on the subject, every bit of information I could, and, you know, I wanted to find out what they did. And what they were doing was just they were couponing, but they were doing it effectively, where they were applying the highest value coupons to the best sales, not just using coupons by themselves and not just shopping sales by themselves as the magic bullet, but making sure that you're combining both at the same time. And then that ultimately means you get Cheerios for 50 cents a box, you get free, you know, you get toilet paper for $1, you know, what normally was, you know, $5 or $6. I mean, you could save massive money. But the problem they had was it was just a very laborious job. And I didn't want that. So my technical background I basically said, well, is there a way that I can automate this system? And that became Savings Angel. And I was really starting just doing it for myself. And then I thought, oh my gosh, this is pretty valuable. I mean, I'm like saving $200-$400 every month. I bet people would pay for that. And, you know, people are awesome. And if you just ask enough people their opinions, you'll learn so much and you'll get people that will step forward and say, hey, I will help you with that. And sure enough, I got that and I started Savings Angel. And then, you know, I knew how to work with the media. I'd been a journalist before. I'd owned a newspaper. You know, I really knew how to work that system very well. And I had sit down with about 20 different media personalities or publications or TV stations, radio stations. And out of the 20 I sat down with, when I shared my dream, 18 of them said, yes, we will support you in that. We'll put you on TV. We'll write a news article about you. You know, we'll talk about you on the radio. We'll have you on the radio. We'll interview you. And as a result of that, Joe, I mean, Savings Angel, I was making a full-time income, a very good full-time income within 1 year. And for most small businesses, that's pretty astounding. So, and as a result, you know, we just kept, you know, layering media, you know, effective media relationship upon effective media relationship. And Savings Angel has gone on to produce over $5 million in sales now, which is just, you know, I still kind of pinch myself, but that's what we do. And, you know, again, it's a very valuable service. It absolutely works. But I think this, you know, and this is why I love the subject of your show is, when you share your dream with other people and they feel your conviction, they want to be a part of it. They want to support you. They see that you are unstoppable, that this is a train that's moving. And so they can either choose to get on board or they can choose to sit off to the side, but they're sure as heck not going to stop it. And that's, you know, my dream with Savings Angel is much more than just helping people save money. My dream is that that is how you end lack and need in our community, because people are inherently good. I believe that. That's just a fundamental belief that I have. And if you empower good people to do what they want to do, I think you can solve so many problems. And so the reason why I help people save, you know, $500 plus every single month, and I show them how they can get groceries for free, is so that they can use those things and they can give and donate to the charities and the organizations that they really believe in. And then collectively, I mean, that's how you end hunger, lack, and need. It's just as simple as that. And so I think because I've shared my dream and my vision, I think a lot of people, that resonates with a lot of people. And so, you know, to your point in the subject of this show, dreaming is just, it's just such a critical part of living. And when you dream out loud, people respond.
There's countless examples of websites and podcasts and you, like, especially YouTube channels where it's just people, even if they're just sharing their life out on those formats, people do respond and people get really defensive because they throw that bond. I love the idea of like that this is a train and it's people can get on it or they can miss it. And yeah, I just think that's a great way of putting it, because there's a good chance they probably will miss it. and they'll miss out on all the great things that happened. And then they'll turn around and be like, oh, look, you were successful. I knew it all along. And it's like, you weren't there.
Yeah.
You didn't go through the struggles. You didn't help me through the struggles when I needed help, whether it was not just financially, but just, you know, sometimes you just, I mean, being an entrepreneur yourself, you know, hey, there's days where it's like, wow, it's like nothing is going on. This isn't The Office where it's like, oh, nothing's going right. The copy machine's not doing this or that. You know, there's days where like nothing is going on and you have to keep yourself motivated to just push forward and be like, hey, maybe tomorrow I'll get that email and everything will just turn around and, you know, brighten up my day.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I can say is that it's so important that, and I think what people care about more than the words someone says is the energy behind what they say. And I've seen studies that bear this out. But, you know, if you are a dreamer and you're just kind of a wishy-washy dreamer and, you know, you could people can tell you're not serious about it. You're just hoping and wishing and praying or whatever. But there's not a lot of like focus or energy behind that. I don't think you're going to really attract a lot of people or enroll them in your vision. But if people can feel, you know, something behind your words, that this guy or this gal is really serious about it, and it's not necessarily intensity, but it's just sort of, you know, it's hard to describe, but there's just this energy that comes with some people, and you can either tell. Now, as an experienced entrepreneur, I can sit down with a new business owner and I can generally tell you, Joe, if they're going to succeed inside of 20 seconds. And it all comes down to, you know, kind of that authentic conviction. You know, they're not putting on a show. They're not, you know, I could tell that their heart's not in it yet, but there is an authentic conviction and they believe in what they do, then I instantly am with them and I know that they're going to succeed. And I instantly want to do what I can to support them in that. And when you hang around with enough entrepreneurs too, I will say that, you know, business owners, entrepreneurs, especially if they've created any amount of success, are the nicest, most supportive people that you'll ever meet. You know, your brother-in-law, cousins, you know, whatever, who's, you know, just working a job that they hate, it's probably going to be a little bit different experience with them. Because they, you know, I remember when I quit my job to start my own company, it was really weird. It was kind of a hierarchy. When you had a going away, if you were going to, let's say you were going to go serve, you know, some noble mission overseas, or you're going to do some volunteer thing. Well, that was kind of the highest good that you could possibly do. And you got a big cake, you got a big card, and you got a big party at your going away farewell at this job. Second best would be maybe going back to school. Hey, I'm going to go back and I'm going to get my master's, or I'm going to go finish my bachelor's degree. Big party, big, 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 big party. If you were leaving to get another position, particularly if it was, you know, somewhat of a promotion, there was a big party. It was very supportive. But Joe, this was absolutely crazy. When on my final day, I didn't get a card. I didn't get a party. And as a matter of fact, I asked somebody about it. I was like, you know, it's kind of weird. Why didn't I get a card? 2 weeks later, I got a card and it was... it basically looked like a funeral sympathy card. So it's weird. You know, it's like people who just aren't in this realm, it's just hard for them to understand, you know, why you would do something so risky and, you know, and leave a perfectly good job. Well, you know, they just have a different, you know, they just have different music playing inside. And it's not better or worse. It's just different. So I'm empathic to where they are, but still, it kind of sucked when I didn't get a party and I only got a funeral card.
2 weeks late. So yeah. You were already buried at that point.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, by the way, since you're already dead, here's that funeral card.
It only would be better if they sent flowers too.
Yeah.
Or dead flowers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So with that said, how was it received by your family when you told them, like, hey, I'm quitting my good job to go do something that's not my good job?
Yeah. So my family was supportive simply because it runs in our veins. My dad is a business owner and he had a job for a while. And he said, you know, I remember when he was to the point where he's like, you know, I can do this so much better on my own. I can make more money and I can be a better service to my customers. And, you know, I remember when he did that and it was a risk and there was definitely some financial sacrifice that we had to make. I mean, we were broke growing up and that was a good thing. You know, my parents taught me about the value of working very, very hard. So, you know, when I told my dad I was going to do the same thing, you know, he said, well, you know, prepare for sacrifice. But that sacrifice is going to be a really good thing for you. And now that sacrifice lasted a lot longer than I had expected because, again, you know, businesses that I would start would do okay. It was just the income, you know, even though the income would go up and down from month to month, and that's kind of the plight of the business owner. The bills did. The bills were stable, my friend. And so that makes for some real growing experiences. But you know, again, finally, after a number of years, you know, it just feels so good when the hammer strikes the nail perfectly, and you're like, oh my gosh, now I see why I had all of these other experiences. It was so that I could have this success right now. And some people look at, you know, the success that I've created and say, well, he was just so lucky, right place, right time. No, that's not how success is built. Success is built when preparation meets opportunity. And I was prepared. I had the right experiences. I had the right network. And if you have the right experiences, if you have the skill set, if you have the tenacity, and you have the right support network, and the opportunity is good, well, that's kind of all you need. And just you just have those ingredients and you'll end up making a great cake.
Well, it's good that you were able to get the support. Now, when you left, did you already have an idea of what you were going to be doing?
Well, yeah, because I could do internet development. I had a few contacts that I knew that would blossom into a job. But, you know, that can be a little frustrating when you're just doing, you know, as an independent contractor and you're just, you know, you haven't created passive income. So you do a job, you get paid for the job. If you don't do a job, you don't get paid. And so I knew that for me to create passive income, I needed to create something that would pay me where I could create a profit margin month after month after month. And so that's what led to starting an internet service provider. And so I partnered with another company. We got some funding. We got set up. And that ended up not being very successful. But again, the idea was if we could build enough customers, then, you know, we would have enough cash flow coming in that could pay down the funding and ultimately create a nice passive income. And then kind of the newspaper was the same way, although that was a lot of work. Ultimately that was the same goal where I would have a bunch of writers, I would have everything taken care of and eventually could kind of create that. And so there are a lot of independent contractor positions available out there if you don't mind, you know, trading time for dollars. But ultimately where you want to get to is you want to create a system that pays you when you sleep. And, so Savings Angel, we work our guts out, but I've got a team of, you know, we've had as many as over 50 employees at one time. You know, we've gotten a little bit more intelligent with our technology and I don't need that large of a workforce, but people can sign up in Antarctica at 3 a.m. and I get paid. And, you know, that allows me to fulfill our operations, provide a great service, but hopefully, you know, make a decent profit margin at the end of the day while I'm out doing good.
Yeah, I mean, the passive income ideas, I mean, it was made huge by Pat Flynn, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, he's got a podcast about it, but passive income has been, you know, passive income has been the goal of every business owner since the dawn of man, you know, and, you know, Robert Kiyosaki was talking about that, you know, the B quadrant and, you know, Cashflow Quadrant is an excellent book. And so, you know, in the B quadrant, to get rich, you have to leverage stuff. You can either leverage money, and that would put you in the I quadrant, or you can leverage the efforts of other people, provide great opportunities to other people, help in, you know, help them be a part of your vision, your goal, your dreams. And, but, you know, at the same time, ultimately you want to make sure that they're getting paid fairly. And, you know, I'm one of those people, I love to hire my friends. I love to hire, you know, people in my neighborhood. I love to hire people who are my customers. I don't necessarily look for the cheapest labor throughout the world. I believe in investing in my people. But at the same point, if they can help me create a great product, then, well, generally that means, you know, profits.
That's something that we and you are totally different on. I don't like to hire friends or people that I know because I don't like to poop where I eat.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so to speak.
Well, then stop pooping in your business, right? You know, I guess that would be my response to that is, you know, if you, talking now hypothetically about that concept, not based on your belief, but I am willing to invest in my people and I'm willing to pay more because I believe in every aspect of what I do. And I take such great care in every element that there are just some things that I'm not willing to risk. My content, for example, you know, my data has to be good for my customers. If I have a stay-at-home mom who invests $20 with me and she gets information from our website and that information was created overseas, and trust me, I have competitors who create all their data overseas. I don't. I do it from people who shop at those stores and they know what they're doing. As a result, it costs more money, but I think about that stay-at-home mom. And if that stay-at-home mom goes into a store and she finds that our data is just not that good, I have really done her a disservice. Okay. Especially if she's investing $20 where it's a risk for her. I cannot let that, I cannot let that rest on my shoulders. So I owe it to my customers, you know, I owe it to my customers and my audience to provide them the ultimate best. And for me, I have found that, you know, attracting the best people helps me to truly create that as a company.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying that in that sense of outsourcing overseas or whatever. I'm saying just like in general with friends and family, it's very tough to work. I mean, I worked in a family business for 22 years. So,
yeah,
I have quite a bit of experience working in family business.
Yeah. So family may be a bit different because ultimately, you know, positions are available, positions are not available. So that, to your point, absolutely. That might make it a little uncomfortable, you know, especially if there's hard feelings. If you're like, if you look at them, you're like, look, I'd love to keep you on, but it's just not effective to do it in this manner anymore. Yeah, I could see where that. Hopefully, you have the relationship where there would be an understanding, but I think with family, that might be a little difficult. So yes, to your point, I absolutely agree with that. That needs to be under very heavy consideration before that opportunity is given to somebody.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, it's so easy to take advantage of the situation too, and sometimes not even intentionally. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough to get rid of family. It's tough to get rid of friends. It's tough when other coworkers who do good jobs have problems with people who are friends, you know, personal friends or family of the owner. You know, you basically have no choice at that point. You're just kind of dealing with it or moving on to something else. But
yeah,
with that said, what's one of the biggest roadblocks that you've hit along the way?
I shared a lot of roadblocks that I experienced with other companies before. With Savings Angel, you know, I really have been very, very blessed in that, you know, I have a great audience. And I don't want to say it's been easy because I work my tail off. I 18-hour days are not uncommon. And so, which is why I was referencing that I really need to, you know, to make sure that I spend that time with my family because I'm just so passionate about what I do. And, you know, I would say the one roadblock or one bad thing that happened, not necessarily a bad thing, but I did launch a product at the beginning of this year, and it was a financial wellness product where basically I will teach you savings mastery in every area of your life. And one of the hardest areas to sell, one of the hardest groups to sell a product to are people who want to save money. I've been very effective with Enlightened Shopping, which is what I've been talking about, primarily because there's just a very clear return on investment. Now, education, people that are just really focused on saving money, it's very difficult for them to understand investing in education on that topic. And so my sales on that product, it was an e-course product, were not really good when I launched it. And I was really surprised. But I don't think that, you know, my mistake was that I just didn't do enough research ahead of launching that. So I tend to be the learn by doing personality. I'm just going to do the deal and see what happens. Well, I mean, I sacrificed a good 5 months of development time to build that e-course. Now, it's doing good now, but I had to learn exactly who I needed to market that product to. My end users, not really the best audience to market that product to, because I would get a lot of people who would say, well, I already know everything there is to know about saving. Okay, well then I'll just take my 5 years worth of research and pack it up then. But, you know, that's unfortunately just the audience. You know, so what I found is that offering that program through employers, however, has been incredible. And it's actually been, you know, unfortunately, it took me, you know, a good 6 months, I'd say 5 or 6 months to kind of figure that out. It would have been much better if I could have figured that out in 2 to 3 months earlier on by doing more research. So I'd say, you know, I tend to have the ready, shoot, fire, or was it? Yeah, no, you know, without aiming, basically, just not even getting, just kind of shoot, ready, aim, whatever the saying is. I tend to do that a little bit because, you know, when I'm an idea guy, and when I get a great idea, I don't like to just wait around. I like to get out and I like to do the deal. But research and working with your audience, I think, is a very critical step that needs to be included in any product launch. And so that one, that happened at the beginning of this year. And thankfully, you know, as a company, we're doing okay. So it wasn't too painful, but still, I would offer that bit of advice to other entrepreneurs.
I think that's a great way that you came up with, is to go to the employers where they have the money to invest in this type of stuff for their own employees to go and save money.
They do. And it's a slam dunk because it solves so many problems. Employees' money stress in the workplace causes decreased productivity. It increases absenteeism. It increases healthcare costs. It decreases the amount of people that are saving for their retirement. You know, if they're money stressed, they're not retiring on time. If they're money stressed, they're jealous and they don't like their employer so much because they feel like they're not getting paid enough, when in fact they are actually earning a fair market value for their work. And so through offering a financial wellness, packaging this Savings Mastery product as a financial wellness product to improve life in the workplace and employees' personal life, it has absolutely been a slam dunk. And I absolutely love working with employers to solve a very real and very expensive problem. And so, you know, again, I kind of created this product on accident. And sometimes, you know, some of the best products are developed by accident anyway. So, you know, maybe not necessarily a bad thing this happened.
So what would you say the biggest disappointment so far with entrepreneurship has been?
Honestly, Joe, I have had a lot of pain. I mean, I've gone through, you know, having to rely on family for help. I lost a house and had to live with my in-laws for 8 to 10 months at one point. You know, I've experienced all that. But and at the time, I don't know if I would tell you it's a disappointment, but today I will tell you that it's definitely not a disappointment today, because it was part of building who I am today. And I needed that. I needed that as part of my ability to grow. And so I'm really grateful for those disappointments. And always remember this, okay? And I believe this, and I've experienced this. Your greatest successes will always be immediately on the backside of your biggest disappointments and your biggest failures. So when I have like really weird disappointments that happen in my life, I get excited because I know that immediately following that bit of bad news, something really great is going to happen. So Yeah. If you get disappointed, get excited.
Oh, I love that outlook. I think that's awesome, man. Yeah, and you know what? It usually is the case, though. You could also say that something is always in the last place that you look.
Yeah. I mean, so there's something to be said for, you know, they always talk about that analogy of, you know, mining for gold and stopping 2 inches before the gold vein. I mean, that can drive any entrepreneur crazy, you know, knowing that, because, you know, you might end up just, you know, spending way too much time doing something that you really shouldn't be doing because you believe it and you don't want to end. So that's always, you know, something you have to weigh to make sure you're doing the right stuff.
If you were having a dinner party, what 3 guests, living or dead, would you invite?
Well, first would be Napoleon Hill, because Think and Grow Rich was just so profound for me. In particular, you know, at the very beginning of the book, and if you're familiar with the book, he talks about there is something written in this book and most people will not pick it up. And I love that. And as I read the book, I really sought to discover what that was. And as I read the book, I feel like I discovered it, because throughout the book, I mean, he really drops some bombs in there. I mean, he talks about stuff like, you know, communicating with, you know, and you could call it inspiration. And I think he calls it, you know, just communicating with spirits. I mean, you know, some really heavy stuff, like, wow, really? But then he does, it's weird, because he'll drop these bombs throughout the book. And then he'll say, oh, yeah, but this could just be a figment of my imagination or whatever. And he completely dismisses it. And I thought, why does he do that? Because he does that on more than one occasion. And then I got back, you know, I thought back to that promise that he issued, that there was going to be something written in this book that most people were not going to get. And my belief is that that's what it was. When he dismisses himself, he's only doing that for the sake of the skeptic who's not ready for that. So I would say, reread Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. And it's just to answer your question, Napoleon Hill, Napoleon Hill's son and Napoleon Hill's grandson. I don't know, whatever. You know, Jesus is welcome to sit down at the table. Of course, he's at the head of the table. And then I'd have my family there too. That's more than 3, but that's who I'd have at my table. But I really do want to throw out Napoleon Hill, because reading that book was life-changing for me, and every bit of it is absolutely true. You can get inspiration. Now, where it comes from, well, that's up to you to decide, but that inspiration is available to us all.
So could you share a favorite memory from your entrepreneurship?
Yeah. Okay, here's one. You know, I've got, you know, just so many moments, it's hard to pick a number one. Here's one, though. You know, the most important thing, I think, the most important money that an entrepreneur will ever get is that kind of that first paycheck, because that first paycheck confirms that it's real. And I remember when it was either radio or maybe a TV spot or something like that, and I ended up making close to $300 in one day. And that's not a lot of money, but for me at the time, that was like gangsta money. That was just crazy to make $300 in a day. And I remember getting up from my, you know, I saw that information, you know, on my website, and I got up out of my chair and I walked outside on the back deck, and we lived in Michigan at the time, and it was a cool evening, and it was, you know, it was night out. And I remember, you know, just kind of looking up at the sky and just being in such a state of humble gratitude, and almost that moment of, you know, why God me? You know, why would I be picked to experience this? You know, why would I receive such an amazing blessing? And I remember just being so filled with gratitude and humility that I just thought, well, this is the reason why. Because, you know, because of my experiences and my hardships, you know, and everything else that I've, you know, that I've learned and grown to, it's because, you know, when I see that gift or that those sales and that income, I don't, you know, give myself a high five and saying, yeah, that's all me, buddy. But no, it's more than me. It's because I listened, and because I believe I have a humble heart. And, you know, in that gratitude, I just felt like the richest man in the world. And I'll never forget that moment. And I try to live each day in gratitude. And as a result, you know, you live each day in gratitude, you're going to be one of the happiest people that walk the planet.
You know, I think the key word there was listening. So many people don't know how to listen. You know, actually, I'm in a class right now for speech in college, and, you know, listening, it's the number one to number two thing in the whole class. Mm. Learning how to listen and effectively listening. And it's a really tough skill, because even the teacher's like, you know, I suck at listening. So, which is probably why she teaches speech.
If you want to be really good at networking, strive to be interested and not interesting. I mean, if you legitimately like other people and you are interested in other people, then, I mean, you'll be one of the most popular people in the room as a result. I mean, people love to be heard. And, you know, this kind of gets into the Dale Carnegie type stuff. You know, it really works. I mean, and if you truly listen to other people, and don't worry about being a me monster, you know, about everything has to be all about you, and you know, you're just waiting for the other person to stop talking so you can outdo them with your story. You know, don't be that person. And if you can just let the conversation be all about the other person, don't worry. You know, people will find out about you. But just, you know, show more interest in other people than in yourself. And life is just easier.
So what do your dreams for the future look like?
Oh, my gosh. So I just launched a new website, and I haven't done this. I mean, I've done everything under the Savings Angel banner for the past close to 8 years now. And, you know, working with entrepreneurs over the year, and I've done a lot of consulting, I've done a lot of coaching, and done a lot of, you know, working with companies and helping them get their messaging and their branding right, helping them get on the news. I've got a huge media database. I've been on TV or radio more than 1,000 times now. I've been, you know, I write a syndicated column, and I've done that for, gosh, I think it's about 4 or 5 years. I'm really media savvy, you know, just based on my experience, not because I'm gifted or anything. I just have been doing it for a while. So I've done a lot of helping of other entrepreneurs to help them get on the news and help them to explode my business. Because Joe, I mean, if I never got on the news at the beginning, there would be no Savings Angel. I can tell you point blank, I wouldn't have achieved what I did. And so I actually just launched a new service because I really want to help other entrepreneurs experience what I experienced. And the website's called millionsinfreemedia.com. And I do a free webinar. I don't care if you don't do anything else with me in life, but just attend this free webinar so that I can take you step by step over about 45 minutes, and I will tell you exactly how to get your brand on TV news. When you get on TV news, I mean, I have some media appearances where all instantly in 1 hour's time, I have more than 2,000 people hit up my website and make, you know, several thousand dollars in sales. It's really exciting when you become kind of a local celebrity when you get on the news. And so I want to help other entrepreneurs to experience that same thing. And so, yeah, so you can check that out, millionsinfreemedia.com.
Yeah, I'll have that in the show notes at howtodream.co.
Sweet.
So is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
My gosh, I have shared all my best stuff, Joe. I can't think of anything else specifically, you know, other than keep yourself tenacious and, you know, just know that there are absolutely, you know, seasons of life. And in business, you will be required to go through these seasons. And this goes back to old Jim Rohn stuff. He wrote a book called The Seasons of Life. And, you know, you will have winters in your business. And winters stink. I mean, when you just receive a string of bad news, something doesn't work, you lose a key employee, you lose, a competitor pops up and all of a sudden you start losing lots of business, you know, whatever it is, something, you fail. And, you know, the good thing we know about the calendar is, Joe, that after every winter, we get another season, and that season is spring. And spring is a season for rebirth. It's reevaluating what we're doing. It's asking lots of people lots of questions, getting lots of feedback, getting lots of ideas, you know, figuring out where you want to sow your seeds. Because after spring, we know comes summer. And summer is the time when you can start to see everything grow, and you see the you're just starting to see the fruits of your labor. And then, of course, after summer comes fall, and fall is the harvest. And when you can enjoy a rich harvest based on the seeds that you sown, and based on a winter that you persevered, and you grew as a result, it's just, it's the most rewarding time of your life. And, you know, I'm kind of in that summer, I'm in that summer phase right now, especially with the launch of this new product. I'm just so excited to be of service. It's really, it's again, Joe, it's kind of that music inside me of what I want to do. And again, as an entrepreneur, this is the path that allows you to do exactly what you want to do and be of service to other good people.
Every business needs to have that goodwill if it wants to really not just succeed, but to go for a long, long time and not eventually crumble underneath of you as a sham or a scam.
Yeah. Serve other people. I mean, truly serve other people and have that be where your heart is. And I'm sure you've heard this before. The money will take care of itself. You don't need to worry about that. Have a good product, you know, have a business plan, but your heart should be with the people that you serve. And just help enough people get what they want and, you know, don't worry about it. You'll get what you want.
Definitely, definitely. So would you like to plug your websites?
Well, sure, I kind of have, so forgive me for that. It's just kind of part of my story. But yeah, if you're welcome to check me out, savingsangel.com. And I do a podcast called 90 Days to Abundance. And the podcast is primarily designed to help you score lots of easy wins. It's all about, you know, when you listen, I want you to listen and say, oh my gosh, there's like something, like I can take my family to, you know, this Boston Market and the kids eat free on Thursday. You know, I share a lot of like really cool deals like that. I share like, oh my gosh, if you print out this coupon and you bring it into Walmart, well, you're going to get free mouthwash. You're going to get free whatever. I love hooking people up. So if you would really love to have a friend that always seems to have the hookup for you, I teach you how to stay in hotels for half price. I teach you how to basically all the life hacks that you'd want in life so that you can get more out of life. It's not about being cheap and frugal. It's about getting all the upgrades that you want and enjoy all of the abundance that you deserve. And that, again, the name of that podcast is called 90 Days to Abundance. And then finally, I already mentioned millionsinfreemedia.com. And I have a free webinar that you can check out. And hopefully I can help you gain some skills that can help you get some more attention for your brand. And, you know, more attention means more customers, and more customers can mean more money.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll have all them at howtodream.co. And so people can get that if they don't write it down right now, you know, especially if they're driving or something. Well, I mean, I really appreciate you coming on the show, Josh, and I would love to have you on again in like 6 months to a year, and we'll follow up on how you've been.
Oh, that'd be terrific, Joe. Thank you so much, and thank you for producing the show, too. I mean, dreaming is just, it's a lost art, and, you know, when you're just living for the world and in the world, it can be very easy to stop dreaming because we feel like, well, that's just not who I am. And so we stop ourselves from thinking about what's possible. And when we stop doing that, you know, it's like, I feel like we're dying. You know, we're just kind of slowly just working our way to the grave if we're not actively seeking inspiration and dreaming and asking ourselves, why not? Why can't I do something crazy and audacious like that? So thank you for your show.
No problem. I hope to keep doing it for a long, long time.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, you will.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, thanks again, Josh. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.
Today's background music has been provided by Tom Amin. You can check out more about Tom Amin at tomaminmusic.com.